Hello, this is Tierra with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 7th, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Reindeer, Crafts, Cocoa, Highlight Area Holiday Events. This article is written by Donette Beckett. This article takes place in Forsyth. A reindeer named Mary didn't want to miss Rudolph's village market in Forsyth. So she traveled from her farm in Martinsville, in a trailer, not by flying through the air, to attend the annual holiday festival. The 7-year-old reindeer brought with her a little extra dose of family fun. She's going to have a baby in April, said Doug Donkey, Mary's owner. The article includes a picture of two people. One person is patting the reindeer, and the other person is holding the leash on the reindeer. And, of course, the star of the show, a reindeer. The photo is captioned, Mary the Reindeer is a popular attraction at Forsyth's Rudolph's Village Market, an annual event filled with holiday activities for the young and young at heart to enjoy. The picture was taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett, Herald and Review. Continuing with the article. Last weekend's snow stuck around, providing several local holiday festivals scheduled a week later with unexpected, yet appreciated, seasonal decorations. It's perfect and could be a lot worse, said Jill Appleby, Forsyth Village Administrator. At least it's not last weekend. Lincoln resident Amy Hyde brought her grandchildren to Forsyth as part of their weekend family activity. And this is our third time coming, she said. Every weekend, we have granny camp. Next, we have a picture. It appears to be of three children in the foreground. One is in the background. And this picture is captioned, Cousins Garrett Hyde left, Brielle Harnicky center, and Gracie Hyde visit the craft area at the Rudolph's Village Market in Forsyth. This picture was taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett with the Herald and Review. Continuing with the article, the children's attention was drawn to Mary. But there's face painting too, said 6-year-old Brielle Harnicky. I like everything, really, her cousin Gracie Hyde, 8, added. Gabe Harnicky, 8, and his cousin Garrett Hyde, 6, also studied the vendors. We want to buy a Labubu, Garrett said about the newest toy trend. The festivals are an ideal opportunity for vendors to meet new customers and discuss their products. Matt Grossman, owner of Ope Goods Company, sells Decatur-based t-shirts. Iconic images include the Bikini Tree, Cruisin' Eldorado, and Eldorado Bowl. What sparks my interest most is when people come in and their eyes light up. Then they start talking about the past, he said at the Forsyth Festival. If you know, you know. For the customers who have already grown tired of the snow, the Richland Community College Holiday Market was an escape, as well as a shopping opportunity. Breaking here, we have another photo. This one appears to be of a greenhouse. There are three adults standing in the back, and it is captioned, during the Richland Community College Holiday Market, the college promoted the horticulture department while encouraging others to holiday shop. This photo was also taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett, with the Herald and Review. Continuing with our article, Cheyenne Curry, Richland Greenhouse student employee, had a display of small house plants from the greenhouse. For the holiday market, it's always the first weekend in December, she said. We always have vendors of all kinds, soaps, lotions, and foods. The horticulture department will take any chance they can to promote the school. This is a really good opportunity to shop, get some hot cocoa, but also see our greenhouse and a lot of the really cool parent plants like our lemon trees, our giant banana trees, Curry said. You kind of get to really see some of the bigger house plants. The holidays were still the focus for the Richland event with hot cocoa, kids' crafts and treats, as well as the holiday-themed houseplants and decorations. Almost everything here can be converted into a gift, Curry said. We have another picture. There is a lady standing at a table with a lot of sweets, and it is captioned, Razia Zabehi sold decorative sweets for her company, R&J Fancy Foods, during the Richland Community College Holiday Market. We are in the farmers markets in the summer, she said. This picture was also taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett, with the Herald and Review. Continuing with our article, Lisa Morris, greenhouse manager, was ready to help the customers keep the Christmas mood. We have some wrapped gifts that look like decorations, she said. Then we have festive wrapping around the plants and decorative buckets and planters, she said. The only thing that's really a Christmassy plant is the Christmas cactus. According to Morris, plants are the ideal holiday gift. But I'm obsessed with plants, she said. She suggested a snake plant for beginners. They are very universal with anybody, she said. They are hard to kill. Handmade gifts were also the specialty for the Blue Mound Cranberry Christmas. For 14 years, the Craft and Vendor Fair has hosted a variety of local vendors and businesses. We don't have duplicates, said Judy Dance, organizer of the event. Even for the vendors as well, they can make a little more money because they don't have to compete with someone else. We stop here to include another picture. This time, it's a picture of shelves carrying many different types of plush toys. I see a snowman, Santa Claus, and birds, and something like a zebra. And the photo is captioned, Handmade gifts were also the specialty for the Blue Mound Cranberry Christmas, including for Zara Meadows, who brought products from the animal den from Urbana. This picture was taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett, with the Herald and Review. Continuing with our article, vendors travel from throughout central Illinois, including Bloomington, Urbana, and Effingham, to attend the Blue Mound event. The products range from homemade baked goods to custom metal groups to direct sales products. As far as people coming to visit our event, we've had them from Springfield to Mattoon and all over, Dan said. There is such a variety and not a lot of the same things. Gifts aren't the only items on the shopping lists. Edinburgh residents Ernie and Ruth Puani have made the Cranberry Christmas event a regular stop for approximately 5 years, shopping for themselves as well as for loved ones. The homemade crafts, we really like that most of all, Ernie said. Especially the popcorn, Ruth said. Zara Meadows brought the animal den from Urbana, hoping to boost sales during the holiday season. We do create a critter, she said. You get to pick out an animal, then you get to either hand stuff it or use our machine to stuff it. Although children enjoy the activity of creating their own stuffed animal, the product is more of an experience, Meadows said. You get to pick out your animal, touch and feel the animals, and feel them at the actual machine, she said. But it can be a gift. We do have the take-home kits that they can hand stuff them. It's just not the same as using our machine. Breaking here for another picture. This time, we have a lady sitting at a table of what appears to be items for sale, and the items appear to be crystals. And the photo is captioned, Lindsay Parker attended the Blue Mound Cranberry Christmas this weekend with her products, including 3D characters and products made through her company, Violet's Boutique, located in Effingham. This photo was also taken by Donette Beckett, D. Beckett, with the Herald and Review. Next, our article says, families had other opportunities to shop for the kids. Lindsay Parker channels Santa at her workshop in Effingham. The company, Violet's Boutique, creates 3D characters and products, including dragons, keychains, and fidgets. We make them ourselves using a 3D printer. They are very colorful, she said about the variety of products, and some grown-ups are kids at heart. For several vendors, this weekend was considered the last opportunity to participate in a holiday fair or festival before Christmas. But we are open to mailing items to people, Parker said. We are willing to work with people. Encouraging families to attend has been important to several of the festival's organizers. Back in Forsyth, Mary has been a regular attraction at the outdoor holiday festival. She's always the hit of our night, Appleby said. It's just really fun to start the season off right with our community and visitors. Mary and her 11 co-workers aren't done spreading holiday cheer. "We see thousands," Donkey said. "Sunday we've got a show where we're going to see 10,000 people." Mary also provided some education to the Forsyth Christmas Festival. According to Donkey, Santa's reindeer are all girls. "Because the girls keep their antlers until April and May when they have their babies," he said. "The boys are losing theirs now at Christmas time." This is the end of our article. You can contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. You can follow her on Twitter, or now it's called X, at Donette BHR. Our second article on the front page is titled, "Neighbors Helping Out Their Neighbors." When systems stop working, people turn to each other in mutual aid. This article is written by Thalia Beatty with the Associated Press. This article takes place in New York. Times are tough. We take care of us. In early November, Kashish Ali posted those words to her Instagram story as part of a years-long practice she's had to fundraise for food and drop it off at community fridges in Atlanta, where she's from, and now in New York, where she lives. Ali, who is 32, and a first-generation Pakistani immigrant, estimated that her friends and family have trusted her with thousands of dollars over the past couple of years. We pause to include a photo. There is a woman in a grocery store and there's a man behind stocking shelves, and it is captioned, "Kashish Ali shops for groceries before filling a One Love community fridge on November 15th in Brooklyn, New York. Interest in local grassroots initiatives to meet community needs has been growing." This picture was taken by Adam Gray, Associated Press. Continuing with our article. For her, it's a practice of giving back and creating connection. It's also part of a growing interest in grassroots efforts to meet community needs that many call mutual aid. Often, mutual aid just comes down to neighbors helping neighbors, and as many face high prices, cuts to government programs, and political uncertainty, organizers say interest has swelled. Donating effort or time to mutual aid organizing is also another way to mark Giving Tuesday, which fell on December 2nd this year, and has become a major day to support nonprofits. Ali first noticed a fridge on the street outside of a brewery in Atlanta in 2020 and got in touch with the organizers via social media. She completed a brief volunteer orientation, joined a group text chat, and then posted on her Instagram that she would buy and drop off groceries. "I ended up raising $700 in like 3 to 4 hours, which was insane," she said. Next is a picture of what appears to be an IKEA bag full of fruits, juices, and yogurt. It is captioned, "A person stocks their trolley with food from One Love Community Fridge on November 15th. In Brooklyn, New York." This picture was also taken by Adam Gray, Associated Press. Continuing with our article. Now, Ali doesn't think of her grocery runs as volunteering, but rather as a habit ingrained in her life that directly connects to those around her. She said when she starts putting granola bars, fruit, or yogurt into a fridge, people immediately come around to look, chat, and grab something to eat. Afterward, Ali posts her grocery receipts and photos of the filled fridge to her Instagram account. "What I noticed was a lot of my friends and family and coworkers and colleagues, they all want to get involved. They want to give back," she said. "But sometimes donating your cash or money to whatever organization, you don't really see what happens with it per se, especially not immediately. So this was a way to get almost instant gratification." One of the principles of mutual aid is that it welcomes everyone. There's no need to show an ID or prove income or residency, and most often, the organizers of these types of very local projects are all volunteers. Organizers are also often recipients, with many groups seeking to remove the distinction entirely between those who give help and those who need it. The low barriers to entry and lack of hierarchy are also part of what distinguishes this approach from the work of nonprofits, organizers said. A mantra of mutual aid is solidarity, not charity. Interest in mutual aid organizing often spikes in response to crises like the COVID-19 pandemic and now economic and political uncertainty under the second Trump administration. Aaron Fernando, who works as an organizer for Shareable, which publishes resources about mutual aid and cooperatives, said they saw huge interest in the Mutual Aid 101 webinars they launched earlier this year. Some 1,100 people attended the first one, up from around 70 attendees at a typical webinar. There is a picture with two people, and one is reaching into a rack where there are fresh fruit. The picture is captioned, "People take food from a One Love community fridge on November 15th in Brooklyn, New York." This picture was also taken by Adam Gray, Associated Press. Continuing with our article, "It just is and continues to be a disempowering and scary time for a lot of populations," said Fernando, which he said encourages people to seek new options to find resources and keep their community safe. In good times, he said, most people don't concern themselves with mutual aid, but there are always people on the margins who are meeting their needs through these types of exchanges. Those small mutual aid projects can grow when disruptions hit. Once things go south, those systems, even though they're just like rickety scaffolding, they get built up a little bit, and then they can catch people if communities have them, he said. Yoli Nunez has been organizing food distributions and exchanges of clothes and household items with the Collective Focus Resource Hub in Brooklyn since the outbreak of the pandemic. Formerly a merchandiser in fashion, Nunez and her fellow organizers specialize in finding free stuff. Breaking here to include a picture of a lady standing in the front, and in the foreground are various groups of people. And the picture is captioned, "Yoli Nunez stands outside of Collective Focus Resource Hub, a mutual aid group, November 18th in Brooklyn, New York." This picture was taken by Thalia Beatty with the Associated Press. Continuing with the article, her group started hearing from friends working in the service industry about which restaurants were throwing food away. Now, they have arrangements with Trader Joe's and Wegmans to pick up food that would otherwise go to waste. They put produce and prepared foods in community fridges outside their Brooklyn storefront, and it's taken almost immediately. "We thought we need to organize and see how we could help each other," Nunez said. And that's literally the whole thought process behind it, is like, we're scared and we need to huddle in and help each other. She said people now reach out to them frequently to ask how to start their own mutual aid projects, which she encourages. "Usually, we want people to branch off and make their own groups, because if we all have groups, it just makes us stronger," she said. Collective Focus decided to incorporate as a tax-exempt nonprofit, in part to afford to rent their space. But they make decisions collectively and rely extensively on volunteers, though they do pay some staff members, including Georgina Edmonds, who has lived in the neighborhood for more than 30 years. At a recent food distribution where they were handing out lentils, tofu, carrots, potatoes, onions, cabbage, and apples, Edmund said the group empowers its members to make decisions and shape the direction of their work. For example, she wants to start a project with a community garden nearby to grow medicinal herbs from seeds. "In the beginning, I found myself deferring a lot to everybody else until someone called it to my attention," she said. "It's like, you know, you don't have to keep asking. You can just do it." The third article included on the front page is titled, "Russia unleashes massive drone and missile attack on Ukraine as diplomatic talks continue." This article is written by Susan Bland and Veselin Toshkov with the Associated Press. This article takes place in Kyiv, Ukraine. Russia unleashed a major missile and drone barrage on Ukraine overnight into Saturday, while Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he had a substantive phone call with American officials engaged in talks with the Ukrainian delegation in Florida, aimed at ending the nearly four-year war. Russia used 653 drones and 51 missiles in the wide-reaching overnight attack on Ukraine, which triggered air raid alerts across the country and came as Ukraine marked Armed Forces Day, the country's Air Force said Saturday morning. Ukrainian forces shot down and neutralized 585 drones and 30 missiles, the Air Force said, adding that 29 locations were struck. At least 8 people were wounded in the attacks, Ukrainian Minister of Internal Affairs Ihor Klimenko said. Drone sightings were reported as far west as Ukraine's Lviv region. There is a picture of a soldier with artillery, and it is captioned, "A soldier tests land drone Saturday in Zaporizhzhia region of Ukraine." This photo was taken by Andriy Andriyenko with Ukraine's 65th Mechanized Brigade. Continuing with the article, nuclear plant temporarily cut off from power. Russia carried out a massive missile drone attack on power stations and other energy infrastructure in several Ukrainian regions, Ukraine's national energy operator, Ukrenergo, wrote on Telegram. Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant temporarily lost all off-site power overnight, the International Atomic Energy Agency said Saturday, citing its Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi. The plant is in an area that has been under Russian control since early in Moscow's invasion of Ukraine and is not in service, but it needs reliable power to cool its 6 shutdown reactors and spent fuel to avoid catastrophic nuclear incidents. Zelensky said energy facilities were the main targets of the attacks, noting a drone strike burned down the train station in the city of Fastiv in the Kyiv region. We have another photo. It is of a sea drone, and it is captioned, "A sea drone, Magura V-7 of Ukraine's defense intelligence, equipped with surface-to-air missiles, maneuvers Saturday in an undisclosed location in Ukraine." This photo was taken by Efrem Lukatsky with the Associated Press. Continuing with our article, Russia's Ministry of Defense said its air defenses shot down 116 Ukrainian drones over Russian territory overnight into Saturday. Russian Telegram news channel Astra said Ukraine struck Russia's Ryazan oil refinery, sharing footage appearing to show a fire breaking out and plumes of smoke rising above the refinery. The Associated Press could not independently verify the video. The General Staff of the Ukrainian Armed Forces later said Ukrainian forces struck the refinery. Ryazan Regional Governor Pavel Malkov said a residential building was damaged in a drone attack and drone debris fell on the grounds of an industrial facility, but did not mention the refinery. Months of Ukrainian long-range drone strikes on Russian refineries aimed to deprive Moscow of the oil export revenue it needs to pursue the war. Meanwhile, Kyiv and its Western allies say Russia is trying to cripple the Ukrainian power grid and deny civilians access to heat, light, and running water for a fourth consecutive winter, and what Ukrainian officials call weaponizing the cold. There is another picture. This one appears to show a oil tanker and possibly a buoy in the water. It is captioned, "The oil tanker Kairos is stranded Saturday near the Black Sea port of Atopol, Bulgaria, after an alleged Ukrainian drone attack." This picture was taken by Zhravko Vasilev with the Associated Press. Continuing with the article, "Ship attacked by drone is stranded." Meanwhile, Bulgarian maritime authorities launched efforts Saturday to evacuate the crew of the oil tanker Kairos stranded off the Black Sea port of Atopol and believed to be part of the shadow fleet used by Russia to evade international sanctions linked to its war in Ukraine. The Gambian flag 274-meter Kairos caught fire November 28th after an alleged attack by Ukrainian naval drones in the Black Sea near the Turkish coast. It was sailing empty from Egypt toward the Russian port of Novorossiysk. It was sanctioned by the European Union in July, followed by the UK and Switzerland. The ship entered Bulgaria's territorial waters Friday under tow by a Turkish vessel, but the mission was abruptly abandoned, leaving the tanker to drift across the sea without power before stranding less than a nautical mile off the shore. On Saturday, Rumen Nikolov, in charge of rescue operations at the Bulgarian Maritime Agency, said that it must be established through diplomatic channels why the tanker was brought into Bulgaria's territorial waters. Nikolov explained that the empty tanker is stable despite the bad weather, adding there is no danger to either the crew or the environment. He said that all 10 crew members of different nationalities are in good condition and have enough food and water for about 3 days. When the weather calms down, the ship will be towed to a safe place, he added. Slow progress on a green security framework. The latest round of attacks came as U.S. President Donald Trump's advisors and Ukrainian officials said they'd meet for a third day of talks on Saturday in Florida after making progress on finding agreement on a security framework for post-war Ukraine. Zelensky said Saturday that he was given an update over the phone by U.S. and Ukrainian officials at the talks. Ukraine is determined to keep working in good faith with the American side to genuinely achieve peace, he wrote on social media. After Friday's talks, the two sides also offered the sober assessment that any real progress toward any agreement ultimately will depend on Russia's readiness to show serious commitment to long-term peace. The statement from U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, as well as Ukrainian negotiators Rustem Umerov and Andriy Notov, came after they met for a second day Friday. They offered only broad brushstrokes about the progress they say was made as Trump pushes Kiev and Moscow to agree to a U.S.-mediated proposal to end nearly 4 years of war. Separately, officials said the leaders of the United Kingdom, France, and Germany would participate in a meeting with Zelensky in London on Monday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Sunday, December 7, 2025. Please stay tuned.